It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Cubs have runners at all three stations. Outfield pretty much straight away against Addison. The pitch on the way. Russell drives one in the air. Deep left center. That's back near the wall. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam, Addison Russell. Cubs lead 7-0. He's got six RBIs, and we're only in the top of the third inning of this ball game.
All right, that's how it happened last night. The Cubs putting away the sixth game of the World Series. Taking the Indians by storm 9-3 on the Indians' home turf in Cleveland. And, you know, the Cubs fans went crazy. You know, listen, all my friends in Cleveland, I'm sorry, but I am a Cub fan. I'm from Chicago. We have to enjoy this moment. You know, the writer in the Fox Sports Report this morning said, for one city, hysteria. For another, heartbreak. And surely it's true. In fact, Addison Russell's grand slam was the first in the World Series in 11 years. That was amazing. And so now it's 3-3. Who would have thought? You know, the Cubs started out so poorly. It's like they were absent from the body and the mind in the first few games. And it was very disappointing. I don't think Cubs fans even thought it was possible for them to come back the way they have. So now tonight, it all comes down to tonight in Cleveland, which kind of breaks my heart. I wish it were in Wrigley Field in Chicago. You can't imagine. You just can't imagine, unless you've been there, what Wrigley Field is like and what Cubs fans are like. You know, it's really, it's an amazing thing, and it's just fun. So that's what's happening tonight. And you know what reminded me as I was thinking about that? This is the way the presidential race should be. And I think that some people actually may think that this is the way it is, where there are two opposing forces fighting on a playing field with rules, with people making sure things are, you know, within the bounds of propriety, with replays, with umpires, and that they fight, they prepare and they fight and they just duke it out until the best man wins. But it's not like that. And I think that's why we are shouting from the housetops about what we are seeing in this country behind the scenes on both parties, when they are both corrupt, when the leadership is certainly in both parties, I believe, is corrupt. And then when it manifests itself in a presidential race, ladies and gentlemen, I do not think that you have any idea the depth of the corruption in this country. I'm learning new things every day, and it is enough to make, you know, your eyebrows stand up and your ears blow back. It is unfathomable. And so we're going to talk about that this morning. Andy McCarthy will be joining me in a little bit. We'll be talking about corruption in the Justice Department, Loretta Lynch, James Comey's part in all of this, you know, what Andy thinks about that, as Andy is a former federal prosecutor. This latest information that the man from Justice who's tasked to review these emails, the 600,000 email found on Anthony Weiner's laptop, is a Clinton partisan. It is absolutely a shocking story, and I'll get back to that later. But I want you to hear a little bit about what's going on the campaign trail. I think Mrs. Clinton is thrown. You can see that in these final days of the campaign, I think they have really already thrown everything they had at Donald Trump, and they thought that was going to be enough. And so she's repeating the same charges, you know, repeating the things that he said about women. She's talking about his taxes. She's pulling up everything that they have already said. And I think that they're not expecting this. They have already spent millions. They've spent millions, you know, renting facilities, planning celebrations for inauguration, election night. They thought they had this in the bag. I'm not saying they don't, because with the Electoral College working the way it does, Mrs. Clinton still may prevail, even though the polls are shifting. But They are thrown, and they are not nearly so certain, and it is an amazing thing to behold. Let's just give you just a few seconds here of Donald Trump and Mrs. Clinton out of the campaign trail yesterday.
For any Democratic voter, you are having a bad case of buyer's remorse. You can change your vote to Donald Trump. We'll make America great again, okay?
I am sick and tired of the negative, dark, divisive, dangerous vision and behavior of people who support Donald Trump.
All right, so that's how it sounds. That's what people are listening to. Mrs. Clinton's going to Arizona, of all places, which has been such a red state. But she's hoping, you know, it's a close race. And there are a couple of things. Donald Trump is, of course, hitting Obamacare, as well he should. You know, premiums are going up an average, just an average. And this is a small percentage compared to the way it's going up in many, many states. 25% is the average, over 100% in Arizona. And in many states, 40, 50%. It's just amazing. And so Donald Trump is calling for a special session after he's elected to repeal Obamacare. Ah, that's got to be interesting, because I think of all the times the Republicans pretended like they wanted to repeal Obamacare and they did nothing. And now it looks like Donald Trump, if he is elected, may actually do that. You know, America needs someone to defend her. We have been the victim of a corrupt system. And that's why they hate Donald Trump, as flawed as he is. He's the one who speaks outside of the box and doesn't have, you know, loyalties to either party. And that's a danger to both of them. So in North Carolina, by the way, a news poll yesterday, WRAL news poll, shows that Donald Trump is now at 51-44. That's amazing. And that's really amazing. That same poll just 3 weeks ago showed Mrs. Clinton up 46-44%. That doesn't mean it's a done deal, but North Carolina, of course, is an extremely important state, as is Florida, where Donald Trump must win that state. But Mrs. Clinton still, according to the numbers, has the Electoral College tied up. And that's why this is, but she's nervous. So I can't begin to explain to you the details of all of that, but we will. We'll be talking about this on the day before the election and on Election Day in more detail. There's a lawsuit that's been filed against the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia by the Public Interest Law Legal Foundation. That's J. Christian Adams. And they have filed a complaint against two registrars who have refused requests to access records related to voters dropping from the rolls because they were found not to be citizens of the United States. Christian and his organization in monitoring just a few counties in the state of Virginia have already found that over 1,000 unlawful registrations were listed for illegal immigrants. And so Christian and his organization are filing suit. And that's really the only way I think we're going to stop some of this. Because if Donald Trump should win this election, the Justice Department switches over to something that's actually following American law and not doing the bidding of a corrupt president, we might actually see some prosecutions on this. Another frightening thing that I read this morning, Bloomberg is reporting, frightening because you just think this, maybe you don't remember, but I surely do, when the Clinton-Gore-Bush campaign ended, it didn't end. It went on for months as the country just held our breaths. The hanging chads has become a joke, but it wasn't a joke. It was a nightmare every day. It was a battle in the courts because the left was fighting to get Gore in, and the right was fighting to maintain Bush's win in the Electoral College. And it really was a nightmare. They pulled out all the stops. And, of course, just in the last, in some recounts, Bush won by just a few hundred votes. So we don't want to live that again. But Bloomberg is reporting that Clinton is assembling a voter protection program that has drawn thousands of lawyers agreeing to lend their time and expertise in battleground states. So expect lawsuits, expect all kinds of things if the race is closed. If the only way we could prevent this is if either of these candidates wins by, say, at least 6 points. Otherwise, it's going to be a bloody battle. The left is certainly not going to lay down. The right usually does. They lay down too soon. They go, oh, well, what the heck? They act as though they think this is that baseball World Series championship where there are rules that apply to both sides, and they just never are willing to fight. But the Republican National Lawyers Association has received $500,000 from Robert Mercer, who was one of Trump's biggest backers. And they are assembling a team of 1,000 lawyers ready to monitor the polls and possibly challenge the election results if necessary, if there's reports of cheating and voter fraud. So much to tell you. I almost think, you know, let's listen to the first part of Ed's report here, and then I'll tell you what I know. Ed Henry.
An explosive new email shows Bill Clinton lined up a cool $6 million for his foundation from Sheikh Mohammed of Ethiopia with a mere phone call. One aide writing, it would be crazy to go all the way to Ethiopia for a conference, quote, unless Sheikh Mo has sent us a $6 million check. Longtime Clinton aide Bruce Lindsay replies, if the call is made, it will help us get the $6 million. I think he should call. The Clinton campaign now says if Hillary Clinton is elected, the foundation will ban foreign money. But another new email shows in 2015, she privately wanted the flow of foreign money to continue as long as there's more disclosure. Bill Clinton also wanted more foreign donations if they're submitted to, quote, an independent body for review. The obvious challenge with this is that there is no independent body to make that review. And a newly leaked email from March 2nd, 2015, the night the New York Times revealed Clinton used a private email account as Secretary of State shows, campaign chairman John Podesta wrote Cheryl Mills, not to sound like Lanny, but we are going to have to dump all those emails, so better to do so sooner than later. A reference to damage control expert Lanny Davis, known for urging the Clintons to err on the side of transparency. Except the timeline created by these WikiLeaks disclosures show a far different approach of holding back information. Starting with the candidate.
All right, that's the first part of Ed Henry's report on Fox News last night. Let me just say that on our Facebook page this morning, I'm not going to have time to get into this, but we are posting an article that lists the 100 top most crucial WikiLeaks emails so far. You know there are thousands. And so this document makes it concise, and you can read it, and you can see for yourself the actual words exchanged and why these things are so crucial. Here's the story that really is the jaw dropper of the day. Internet security expert Kim.com is saying publicly now that Hillary Clinton is in serious trouble. She says that the speculation is that WikiLeaks is going to release Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted email. She has been talking about this kind of, I guess it's Kim Schmitz. I don't know Kim.com, but maybe those of you that know a lot more about social media and Internet are probably on top of this, but she says Clinton is in serious trouble, and she says it's a She says it's coming from Julian Assange. Kim is a man. Sorry. He also predicted that Julian Assange would be Hillary's worst nightmare in 2016 because he has access to information. So, and also kind of a cryptic bleach bit can't bleach it. That was something else that he texted out or tweeted out. I know where Hillary Clinton's deleted email are and how to get them legally. Schmitz tweeted on October 27, added that they are all stored in NSA spy cloud in Utah. And so there's speculation that they're going to be released. And I, you know, if they are, then that's going to be amazing. You heard, Ed Henry just talk about Podesta talking about we're going to have to dump all those email. And so there's big talk about what does he mean by that? He means to, you know, make them public. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And so we have in this exchange this encouragement by Podesta to dump those email. And here's another interesting thing. In a separate email sent out in the first week of March 2015 by Clinton, campaign communications director Jennifer Palmieri, we get yet another confirmation that the president actively misled the public when he said he didn't know Hillary was using a private email address. Here it is. Suggest Philippe talk to Josh or Eric. They know POTUS and HRC emailed. Josh has been asked about that. Standard practice is not to confirm anything about his email. So his answer to press was that he would not comment or confirm. Perhaps while DOJ FBI is taking a second look into Huma Abedin's emails, it can also take a repeat look at some of these, especially the ones involving POTUS. Well, will POTUS be part of those 33,000 if indeed WikiLeaks has them and leaks them? And what exactly did POTUS say under a pseudonym to Mrs. Hillary Clinton? This could be even a wilder ride than we can imagine. Coming up next, former federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Nature, it's flawed by the curse. This is Ken Ham, inviting you to Kentucky to see the family-friendly Ark Encounter. Some Christians view nature as the 67th book of the Bible, but in this view, nature is on the same level as God's Word. They support this false claim with verses that say nature declares there's a creator. Now, they argue this partly because they believe the fossil record is millions of years old. And since the fossil record is part of nature, which they believe is the 67th book, they say God's revelation tells us the earth is very old. Well, God's word also tells us creation groans from sin. You can't claim a fallen creation is on the same level as the infallible word of God. The Bible makes it clear the universe is only thousands of years old. Death and fossils came after sin.
Learn more about our full-size Noah's Ark and how you can plan your visit at AnswersRadio.com. You can also view a transcript of this program at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. The pastor of a Texas megachurch said he was stunned when a government agent stopped him at a TSA checkpoint so his Bible could be inspected. It happened to Dr. Gene Lingerfelt, pastor of the Faith Christian Center in Arlington, Texas. He was stopped at a checkpoint at DFW Airport. The TSA agent politely explained he would have to inspect the Bible. The bewildered pastor and his wife watched as the agent rifled through the good book, unclear what the TSA was looking for or if they found it. The TSA eventually returned the pastor's Bible, and he was allowed to continue his journey. Dr. Lingerfelt told me, had they confiscated the good book, well, there's a pretty good chance his response would have landed him in jail. Folks, you don't tug on Superman's cape, and you never take a preacher's Bible, especially a preacher from Texas. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Two intelligence sources report that over the weekend, a multi-agency task force from the Clinton email case was re-engaged, with analysts working overlapping shifts covering 16 hours a day to identify new classified material. The objective was more clarity on the records recovered from Anthony Weiner's computer for FBI Director James Comey if he faced more pressure for answers, and to assess if intelligence sources and methods were compromised. FBI forensic computer experts developed a software program with key search terms called deduping, which knocks out duplicates. And with Sunday's warrant, investigators can now read the email content. The first step is relatively quick.
You can process a very large volume of emails to eliminate duplicates, eliminate redundancies, and really focus your attention on the documents in those emails that are new.
If new records are identified, a second phase kicks in, known as, quote, eyes on. That's an FBI phrase for physically reviewing the emails and then farming them out to intelligence agencies for final classification. The Trump campaign believes highly sensitive documents are on the computer.
The Bureau is having to get cleared personnel to be able to look at these emails.
So if they're looking for cleared personnel, that means that they've probably discovered classified information in this 650,000.
The FBI is not commenting as the Justice Department sent this letter to Capitol Hill pledging every available resource to expedite the review before Election Day. The Justice Department official who wrote the letter, Peter Kadzik, has now surfaced in WikiLeaks. In the September 2008 email, John Podesta recommends Kadzik for a supportive role in the campaign, calling him, quote, a fantastic lawyer who kept me out of jail.
That's the first part of Catherine Herridge's report. Sandy Rios back with you. This is the amazing story. As they are pouring through those 600,000 email found on the laptop of Anthony Weiner shared by Huma Abedin, the person tasked with overseeing this investigation, this search of the email, is Peter Kadzik with the Justice Department. And now we know that Peter Kadzik's wife, Amy Weiss, worked for the Clinton-Gore campaign. He worked for President Clinton. She worked for President Clinton in the White House. Peter Kadzik is very close to John Podesta, represented him in a couple of criminal cases, and that's why Podesta said he kept him out of jail. This partisan member of the Justice Department is now tasked with reviewing these emails. So I'm anxious to hear what our next guest has to say about that. Andy McCarthy was a former U.S. attorney. He was the prosecutor in the first World Trade Center bombing of the Blind Sheikh. He's an author who has done so much to educate us on all of this. I know that millions of people look to Andy McCarthy for their information about what's going on in justice and what's going on right now. It's very confusing time. He's the author of Willful Blindness, The Grand Jihad, and on we could go because Andy has contributed so much of his intellect to trying to preserve this nation with his pen and with his testimony in the public arena anytime you can. Andy joins me this morning. Good morning, Andy.
Sandy, how are you?
I'm really good, in spite of all the news. I'm good because the Cubs won last night, but that you since you asked me.
What could be better than Game 7, huh?
I know. I'm actually going to stay up tonight and watch it. But, Andy, yes. I have to know. I mean, there's so much about Peter Kadzik I didn't even get to just now, but your thoughts about him being positioned to oversee this latest 600,000 trove of email.
Well, I can't get too worked up about that, Sandy, because I've been saying to people from the beginning that when it's a hyper-political case, as this is, and you have the most politicized department that we've ever had for the last 8 years, President Obama himself is very engaged in the work of the Justice Department. And Loretta Lynch, who ultimately runs the Justice Department, is a fierce partisan. I mean, we've seen that already in the Clinton investigation. So the fact that they have yet another partisan in the chain of command is, to me, you know, I've kind of I've overflown my outrage quotient.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, it's just another brick in the wall.
Yeah, okay, so that leads us to this article that you just wrote, published yesterday. The Clinton email are critical to the Clinton Foundation investigation. You give us some real insight into the dual purpose of those emails, the dual potentially negative effect on Mrs. Clinton, although that's not the point. It's really on justice. And you say that there's some nefarious stuff that has gone on in the New York, in the exposing of those emails and how they've been handled. Explain that.
Well, I thought that the most explosive revelation in that amazing Wall Street Journal report by Devlin Barrett a couple of days ago was that buried in page 14, paragraph 14, we find that the Clinton Foundation has been being investigated by the FBI for a year. And I think that actually, to give her credit, Catherine Herridge, I think, reported this several months ago as well, but it kind of dropped under the radar. And what the report says at the end is that the agents wanted access to evidence that that had been seized on non-government laptops that contained Mrs. Clinton's emails. And, of course, that wasn't flushed out, but for those of us who've watched the investigation, what they're obviously talking about are the laptops of Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, who are two former State Department subordinates of Mrs. Clinton. Mills, in particular, is very close to Mrs. Clinton, but Samuelson's been in the under the cone for years as well. And they were the two lawyers who were tasked by Mrs. Clinton to vet her emails to decide which ones to give to the State Department and which ones would be destroyed. And we know in that process they destroyed 33,000 emails. So those are the emails that that we're talking about, and the laptops that the agents wanted. And what they were told was that they couldn't get access to those emails, the agents, because of agreements that had been made to acquire that evidence. And the reader is kind of left with that, and just told that the lawyers who told them they couldn't get access were prosecutors from the Eastern District of New York. So what I've tried to explain to readers is the Eastern District of New York is not just any one of the 94 districts throughout the country. It is the one where Loretta Lynch was the United States attorney for 6 years, right before Obama elevated her to attorney general. And in fact, it's the U.S. Attorney's Office into which she was launched into national prominence when Bill Clinton appointed her as the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York back in 1999. So she's got very close ties to the Clintons, and she's got very close ties to that office. And the agreements that the prosecutors in her old office that she hired and trained, the agreements that they're enforcing to stop the FBI from getting access to those critical emails are the agreements that were made because Lynch and the Justice Department refused to convene a grand jury in the emails investigation, which denied the FBI the ability that the FBI should have had to compel production of those computers without having to give up anything like immunity from prosecution and the like. So in other words, what they did in the emails investigation was every time somebody was on the edge of possible culpable evidence, what the Justice Department did was give them immunity, right? And they traded immunity for evidence that they shouldn't have had to make any deals to acquire because the law, if you convene a grand jury, allows you to just take the evidence. So that's what's going on here. They cut these really sleight-of-hand deals with these key figures in the Clinton administration, and now they made these outrageous restrictions in the course of these deals. So they tell the FBI in connection with the emails investigation, you can get these laptops, but you can only look up to a certain date. They cut them off so that they couldn't look at the emails on the computers that were in the time frame where we know obstruction of justice and the destruction of evidence happened. They weren't allowed to look at that material. And they even made the agreement that after their very limited examination of these laptops, the FBI would destroy the laptops. So now, obviously, the laptops are relevant to another investigation, and I think potentially a more explosive and damaging one, and that is the one about the Clinton Foundation and the monetizing of Mrs. Clinton's political influence. And basically, the Eastern District prosecutors are blocking the FBI from getting access to those emails.
You know, Andy, the report is that Kim.com, who I'm not familiar with, this internet expert on security, is hinting, more than hinting, that those 33,000 supposedly bleach-bitted email are going to be made public by WikiLeaks. Now, we don't know that for sure, but it surely that's what all the hints are about. So we're going to find out a lot, and that's going to certainly supersede the obstruction by the Justice Department. But I'm curious about, what do you know, Andy? You know, summer reporting, I heard it last week, that FBI agents actually refused to destroy those laptops. Are you hearing anything about that? And what do you know about the rebellion inside the FBI right now?
First of all, I don't know anything about laptops and the destruction of them. I know that the Republican chairman of the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees said that when they saw the immunity agreements with Samuelson and Mills, that they found a provision in those agreements where it was agreed that the FBI would destroy the laptops. Whether they followed through and did that, I don't know. It's a stupid agreement, but I think it's a lawful one. So, you know, I'd be surprised if somebody got an order in the FBI. There's a lot of disgruntlement, perhaps, in the FBI, but it's still an organization where there's a chain of command, and if you get an order, you carry out the order. So I'd be surprised if somebody told them to destroy it that they didn't, but I guess we'll see. As far as, you know, revolt in the FBI, I think, Sandy, in a vacuum, if that was all we had, that would be something that would blow over in a few days. But I think what you have here is kind of a perfect storm of unhappy FBI agents and prosecutors who see how this has been handled in such an irregular way. And that's coupled with new information that we've gotten from WikiLeaks, which really fills in a lot of the blanks here, and the fact that, you know, you have this other evidence now from this Aberdeen Wiener computer. So I think if it was just the attitude of FBI agents whose noses were out of joint, that probably would blow over quickly. But the fact that it's combined with these new streams of evidence has launched it into, a more powerful force than it would otherwise have been.
Andy, it's my personal opinion that this election is much greater than the personalities, including Mrs. Clinton, because it's like the forces, it's an undermining of the entire future of our country that's at stake here. That's my view of it. And so Donald Trump is the imperfect person who seems to be the only one the only potential of pushing this back. And I just want to know, what do you know about his plans for the Justice Department? Could he get rid of Loretta Lynch? Could he replace James Comey? What do you know about plans to sort of fix that huge problem?
I don't know anything about Trump's plans. I know that he has, Christie is supposed to be running the transition. I would suggest that Christie has his own problems and wouldn't seem to me to be the perfect person for that job, but he certainly does know the Justice Department, as does Rudy Giuliani, who's a close advisor to Trump. So, you know, he clearly has people around him who know that institution. If he wins, he'll obviously choose the next attorney general. The FBI's a different and interesting issue. The FBI director has a 10-year term, Sandy, and I think I've heard a lot of commentary today, including by people who I would have thought know better, who suggested that the FBI is totally independent and, you know, the director has a 10-year term, so there's nothing the president can do about that. This was talked about in the context of the potential for a relationship between Comey and Mrs. Clinton if she were to be elected. What I try to stress to people is everybody who works in the executive branch exercises the authority of the president, and the president can dismiss them at will. They serve at the pleasure of the president, including the FBI director. So the president can fire the FBI director and doesn't need cause to do it, but presumptively the FBI director has a 10-year term, and if the president doesn't take any action, Comey would remain the FBI director for the next 6 years. It depends on the president who comes in and whether the president wants to remove the FBI director, but that generally is not done except for cause. But I want to stress that's a tradition. It's not a requirement.
Andy, we only have a minute left, and so this is going to be tough, but you wrote about Huma Abedin and her links to the Muslim Brotherhood probably, I think it was 2010. I think that was...
It was pretty early.
Yeah, and so you laid out the case against her. Yesterday I played, and we put on our Facebook page, Who is Huma Abedin, that video that's circulating. It's an eight-minute video that really makes it very clear, and, you know, people watch videos sometimes more than they read articles. Why do you think nobody listened to you in 2010? You laid this out. This is a serious breach of public security. Just 30 seconds really is all we have for you to comment on that.
I think it's because you think I'm more charming than others do.
Well, that's true. On a scale of charm, I put you right up there, Andy. Well, you know what? In time, it's kind of like Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The things that you've been warning about and reading about will, in time, be appreciated more maybe than they were when you wrote them, Andy. And I always feel that truth prevails. I am ever the optimist. Truth does prevail, even if it takes decades. So, Andy, thank you. We're going to put your article on our Facebook page so people can read it, a couple of your articles, as a matter of fact. And thanks for your time, and enjoy the day, and don't forget the Cubbies tonight.
Yeah, you enjoy Game 7. It's one of the few great American traditions still have left, right?
I know. All right. Thanks, Andy. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
God created us to reflect His glory.
Created to Reflect is more than a conference. It'll have breakout classes filled with discussion that help you build a biblical worldview. It's designed for the next generation of believers.
The Created to Reflect Conference, coming March 2017. Join apologist Alex McFarland and Sean McDowell at Hope Church in Tupelo, Mississippi. Learn more at engagemagazine.net.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it too? If you're like a lot of people, you would like to support the culture-changing efforts of the American Family Association. But there's the very pressing reality that your income must meet your current needs as well as act as seed for future income, either for the short term or for life. A charitable gift annuity might be your answer. A charitable gift annuity offers a unique method for both planning ahead for permanent income and supporting the work of the American Family Association. An AFA Foundation representative will walk you through the details of creating a charitable gift annuity, allowing you to decide if a charitable gift annuity is right for your individual financial situation. Connect with us today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit us online at afafoundation.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 4 years ago, then-Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and four other legislators requested an investigation of whether a top Hillary Clinton aide was helping align State Department policies with the objectives of the Muslim Brotherhood. The lawmakers cited evidence that Huma Abedi had longstanding family ties to those Islamic supremacists. No inquiry was conducted after Republican John McCain denounced Ms. Bachmann in the U.S. Senate. Worse yet, the resulting destruction of her political career discouraged others in Congress from rooting out Islamist influence operations in Washington. Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta's emails indicate her team got Senator McCain to attack Ms. Bachmann. But for that cynical bipartisan effort to shoot the messenger and protect Huma Abedin, some of the myriad national security and legal disasters in which Huma has lately been implicated might have come to light years ago and perhaps been prevented. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Meantime, Karen Dunn, an attorney representing Huma Abedin, Wiener's estranged wife, is telling reporters that Abedin was surprised to learn her emails were on the computer. Quote, from the beginning, Ms. Abedin has complied fully and voluntarily with State Department and law enforcement requests, including sitting for hours-long interviews and providing her work-related and potentially work-related documents.
And late today, the conservative group Judicial Watch released new Clinton emails uncovered by the FBI in the first review. The records show that in November 2010, Secretary Clinton's unsecured server was attacked 10 times in 2 days. The Secret Service was informed, though the FBI director said in July there was no evidence of a breach, though he could not rule it out.
All right, that was the second part of Catherine Herridge's report. Hey, you know, I was just looking while she was talking about how many views we've had on this Who Is Huma Abedin video on our Facebook page. Listen, if you haven't watched that, please do. It's 8 minutes. You need to know. Andy, actually, his article was in 2012 when he wrote about Huma Abedin's brotherhood ties are not just a family affair. Bottom line, Huma Abedin is deeply connected with the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood's intention for this country, according to their own words, is to destroy our miserable house from within. And they have plans. They've listed all their organizations, the Muslim Students Association, a Council for American Islamic Relations, the Islamic State of North America, and on and on, Society of North America. I could go on and on. All of these co-conspirators with the Muslim Brotherhood. They are enemies of this country, enemies. And Huma Abedin had access to all of the nation's secrets. Just 600,000 just discovered, you know, in addition to all the others that have been turned over, hundreds of thousands. She saw it all. She was with Mrs. Clinton constantly, the Secretary of State. This is a very serious situation, one that no one's talking about, not even Fox. You know, when Andy reported this in 2012, we talked about it. Frank Gaffney certainly talked about it on the air. You just heard him mention it again. Michelle Bachmann talked about it. I think three members of the House, Louie Gohmert, and I'm not sure who the other one was at the time, or the handful of them, who wrote a letter just simply asking that this, the connection of the Muslim Brotherhood to high-level offices be examined, that their records be explored to find out if there's a problem here. And they were laughed, mocked, ridiculed, and so roundly, certainly Michelle, roundly defeated, made to be the fool. Not to fool at all. You know, since I was saying with Andy a few minutes ago, you know, the truth does eventually win out. And I think that in time, people will see that the truth tellers who have paid a great price for the truth that they've told are the real heroes. That reminds me of that great article I read to you yesterday. The FBI agents who stood up for the rule of law make me proud to be an American. We put that on PJ Media on the Facebook page too yesterday. Be sure you read that because it's just astounding. He reminds us that it always just takes a few people to stand. It really does. It just takes a few people who say, that's not right. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is not true. There is corruption. There is graft. You know, it seems to be the nature of man to be corrupt, to be dishonest, to take money, to operate out of selfish motives and not motives for the good of all, but for the good of themselves. And so, God brings, I think, you know, truth and gives courage. And some people have trouble finding it, but sometimes they finally do. And then often they pay a heavy price. You know, you think of all the people in the Christian history who paid a heavy price for I can't bend. I will not say that. Just words. Like Martin Luther, I can't. I can't say that. So, you know, here I stand. I could do no more. It takes people like that in every culture to change the world. And so we have people like that. You know, we have people like that in this country and in this nation's capital. There are not many of them, but they have courage. And they're doing everything they can. And so that's why I say to you, I beg of you, do not vote next Tuesday. Do not say it doesn't matter. You'll wait till the next election cycle. Do not talk to me about the details of candidates' lives as your excuse, because there's more at stake. This is not an election like any other. And this is not, again, it's not a fair game like Cubs against the Cleveland Indians. This is a corrupt process, and we may never have a chance to stop the corruption. It is so deep. I wish I had time to bring another article to you. It was, it was in The Guardian, and it was a story. I left it in another place here. It's too far for me to reach it, but it was about what's really going on behind the scenes in America, what the power sources look like. And it is stunning and it is frightening. And it describes a left that is so confident and in the way they have overtaken the institutions, how they have gained power in every single area of our country, and thought they were going to cruise to a win. And now are totally threatened by one man who is politically incorrect, not plugged into their network. He's a tremendous threat to them, and they are doing everything they can to bring him down. And so are people on the right, because they object to his personal lifestyle. That's a given. He's lived an immoral life. That's a given. But we have to back up and see a larger picture than we normally are able to look at. In a normal situation in the United States, a country founded on Christian values and Judeo-Christian beliefs, you will hear Bill Federer on our Thanksgiving special talk about how in the constitutions of the early colonies, one of the requirements was that the candidates for public office should be Christians. It's amazing, you know, because they wanted to make sure that they held to the same standards and beliefs. And the horse is out of the barn on that one. But there was a time when, you know, there was a level of personal morality that was expected. Well, we lost that a long time ago. John Kennedy was a completely immoral man. We didn't know it, but he was. His dad was maybe possibly worse than him. You know, they say that Joseph Kennedy at the dinner table with his sons used to discuss his conquest. They would discuss women while Rose Kennedy was sitting at the table. So corruption and sin at the highest levels came into our system a long time, and I'm sure before that too. And so I'm not saying that it doesn't matter. I'm just saying this is the state to which we've evolved. And so we can't suddenly discover some artificial standard. We have to think in a very big way about what's at stake here. And what is at stake is your future. You know, Karl Marx, one of his chief ends in writing the manifesto was to destroy the middle class. The middle class is the class of people that actually can fight back. And now we can understand this because in our culture, the middle class is the one that, you know, supports churches, supports the Tea Party, supports political activism, gets out there. They're the worker bees voluntarily. They're the ones who open small businesses and become somewhat financially independent, never ultra rich, but comfortable. And they understand, they keep informed. Now, the rich, they're in a different category. They don't have to worry about Obamacare. They don't have to worry about, they have so much money that they can actually live above all of this, whether it comes to open borders or Obamacare or whatever corruption. They have enough money that they can sort of pad their lives and their own children's lives to escape this. But the middle class can't do that, and neither can the poor. The poor are just the poor have no say whatsoever. But the way this works is in a Marxist worldview, you take from the middle class and you give it to the poor, and the rich can't be touched. The rich are the establishment. So they get a lot of breaks and they get to live in the chosen housing and have all the privilege. And the middle class then will have their backs broken. And case in point, Obamacare. Who is this affecting? You know, the president yesterday was bragging about what 25 million more people are covered under Obamacare. Yes, but the middle class are seeing their premiums go up by 100% now. In Arizona and other places, 50, 60% add deductibles that are unbelievable. They might as well not have any insurance, except they have to have it. By law, you have to have it now. You got to pay that. And if you don't pay it, the IRS is going to take it out of your income tax refund. They're going to charge you with your taxes. You are powerless. And you are middle class, are actually bearing the brunt. And your resources, your savings, your plans for your future are being taken from you to give to a lot of people. Now, I think most people in the middle class are happy to help the poor. They are the most generous, probably, class of people in our culture. It's not that. It's that we are opening our borders, and the intention is to drain the treasury and to drain the bank accounts and the resources of the middle class. That's what's happening. So if for no other reason, you need to understand that that's what's at stake in this next Tuesday's election. And if the left prevails, the middle class, small businesses will be destroyed. Middle class people will no longer be middle class. We will move in the area of poverty. I don't mean the next day. It's going to take a while, but it's going to happen. And that is, and you'll be helpless because they want you to be helpless. This is just one of the things at stake. I didn't even talk about religious freedom. I didn't talk about abortion. You know, I could talk about all of those things But please understand that there is tremendous amount at stake with this upcoming election. So shall I talk about this? You know, James Carville, well, we should listen to James just because we should listen to him. He's becoming unhinged. He's a strong Hillary Clinton supporter. He's a partisan, irrational. I've debated him so many times. I have stories to tell, but let's listen to Cut 7. This was him on MSNBC day before yesterday.
James, in July, when Comey did the unprecedented act of holding a press conference to reveal that he wasn't going to have charges recommended to Loretta Lynch, no one then on the left was up in arms over what James Comey had just done. Isn't this a double standard?
That's not correct. No, it's not a double standard at all. When the facts change, you change your mind.
Right.
I know that's a hard concept for people to get sometimes. It is unprecedented. Look at the op-ed pieces. Look at what's going on. And you're sitting here defending an assault on American democracy. I mean, just, you know, somebody probably said nice things about anybody at a given point. This is an unprecedented event that was done at the behest of the House Republicans, that was leaked to the press by the House Republicans. And as we know, the KGB is all over this election. And this is what we're talking about. We ought to be talking about our democracy being under assault right now. And what are we going to do about it? And not what somebody said in July about James Comey. That's a distraction. That's not what's going on. How many op-ed pieces did you read today of people said, Republicans saying this is unprecedented? I mean, this is unbelievable. 8 days before an election, and it's more unbelievable that people like you are defending this.
Well, James, in no way am I defending it. I'm just trying to ask questions
of
you.
Of course you are. You're making excuses. You're making excuses for Comey by bringing up something somebody said in July.
No, I'm not making excuses.
We
ought
to all be of the same opinion.
I think Director Comey.
All right, so it sounded pretty calm compared to what I remembered, but of course the idea is that it's not Mrs. Clinton's email. It's not the Clinton Foundation's corruption. It's not her collusion and subversion. It's not having Huma Abedin. It is, it's the KGB and the Republican Party. They're the ones to blame about this. Well, you know, I've talked about this a number of times. Mrs. Clinton, oh, it's the Russians are trying to interfere with our election to help Donald Trump. And she's said that over and over again, and they've all been saying it. Well, Carl Cameron, who's no fan of Donald Trump, I can tell you, by his reports, had an interesting report yesterday. I want you to hear it. Cut five.
Democrats are unloading, accusing the FBI of a double standard for publicly discussing the Clinton email investigation, but not Trump's ties to Russia. The Clinton camp released a lengthy statement and tweeted a link to reporting by the liberal website Slate last night, suggesting one of the Trump Tower's computer servers has communicated with Russia's Alpha Bank. The Trump campaign denies that. The Clinton camp called it the most direct link yet between Donald Trump and Moscow. But the feds say, as part of their ongoing investigation into Russia's attempt at interference in the U.S. election process, they've as yet found no connection to Trump. The FBI has opened a preliminary inquiry into former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort for consulting work done years ago for Ukraine's Russian-backed president. Manafort has said he has heard nothing about it.
All right, so that was Carl Cameron. So there's that you heard this, and that's been maybe I haven't reported it, but they have ruled out any connection between Donald Trump and Russia, much to Mrs. Clinton's chagrin. Of course, that won't stop her from saying it. But the interesting thing about it is Podesta is the one who received $500,000 from the Russian government for a deal that he did. So that's the untold story. And there's a lot more. There's a lot more to it. The release of uranium rights to the Russians through the Clinton Foundation deal is a shocking story, which we have. Maybe I'll get to that tomorrow. I can't get to it. It's just unbelievable. Here we are 6 days before the election, 5 days, 6 days. And so these things you need to know, go to our Facebook page and you can share the articles and the video on Huma Abedin, and this will be helpful. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless each and every one of you. Don't forget to pray today.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.